Today's reading is from Ruth, chapter 1, verses 19 through 22. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" She called to them, "Call me no longer Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has dealt harshly with me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned together with Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who came back with her from the country of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, I want to say a very special thanks to Sam, who is leading while Beck is out for the week. Sam, thank you for stepping up and stepping in. You know, I said in our pre-service meeting, I was like, we just have such a deep well of giftedness in this community. And so I'm so grateful today for everyone leading us in worship and just creating a space where we can encounter this topic of grief sort of from all angles. You know, it is our third week in our series, A Little Help Here. And as I was thinking about all of the topics we're going to cover over 5 weeks, I thought, this one, like, this is just the most tender of all the topics. Oh, grief. It's hard to talk about. And you know, if you weren't with us last week we talked about change. And someone said, "You talked about loss a lot when you talked about change." And I thought, yeah, I mean, that's kind of part of it. And so I didn't intend this to be like a two-parter. But if you weren't here, go back and listen to last week. Because last week we went through and we really unpacked, what do we do with our loss? How do we navigate our loss? What does that mean for our spiritual lives? So today we're looking at grief, and I think as challenging as change can be, grief is harder. It's harder to talk about because throughout history, throughout our lives, there have just been some really unhelpful things said about grief. Yeah, you're laughing because maybe they've been said to you. Maybe they've been said to someone you love. Maybe you've been in the position where you've had to say something. Where you've sat face to face with someone you love who is grieving, who is mourning, and you think, "I don't even know what to do with this. I don't know how to hold it. I don't know if I'll say the right words. I don't know if I'll offend someone. I'm not quite sure how to navigate this thing called grief." You know, I know that grief is hard to talk about, death and grief, because there's even a Bluey episode about it. I always say that Bluey is that show that it's for kids, but it's actually secretly for the adults. So if there's a challenging topic that you need to know how to navigate through, just find the Bluey episode, and Bluey will lead the way. But in all seriousness, you know, what do we do when grief comes our way? How do we process and heal and keep moving forward? I think one of the things for me as a pastor that makes me the saddest is a narrative I've heard over and over again when it comes to grief. And that's that for a lot of people, when they experience grief, they say the church is the least safe place for them to work through it. Now, I hope that hasn't been your story. I hope that you hear that and you are just surprised. But if you're not, if you've been there, if you've experienced that the church was a place that couldn't hold your grief with you, today, I just want to say, I want this to be a place that can. I want this to be a place where you can bring all of the things that feel so nuanced, so complicated, so confusing about grief, and you can know that these things can just live in this place today, and it's going to be okay. You know, as we talk about grief today, I think one of the things I just want to acknowledge at the very top is that grief is complicated for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons grief is so complicated is because our relationships are complicated. So today as we talk, I guess I just want to acknowledge that this message might bring up some hard, messy stuff for you. It's hard to avoid that when we talk about grief. And so I don't want to avoid it, but I do want to give you kind of a framework for it about what you might experience. You might have memories come up of when you've lost someone and when it was so challenging. You know, when we lose someone, when we grieve, we don't just grieve the fact that they're gone. We grieve the fact that our relationships weren't perfect. We grieve misunderstandings and miscommunication, wounds that maybe didn't heal, things we didn't know what to do with. That's all there. So if that's part of your story, again, that's okay. This isn't going to be a 5 easy steps to overcoming grief sermon today. I don't actually know that we overcome it ever, but I think we do learn to move through it and with it. And my hope is that today we can explore how to move through our grief in a way that believes that hope is possible and that God might actually be doing something even as we grieve. So that's our hope for today. Now, one of the best documented stories of grief in the Bible comes from the book of Ruth, what Phyllis just read for us. Now, if you're not familiar with this book, it is a short one. It's only 4 chapters. It's in the Old Testament. It is sandwiched between the book of Judges and the book of 1 Samuel. And between these like 2 really epic stories in the Old Testament, you've got the whole story of like Moses and the Exodus and all this stuff is happening. And then you've got all these stories about kings like King David, all of that. Between these 2 epic narratives, you've got this simple little book that's the story of a family. I mean, it goes from like big picture to microscopic really quick. And so you've got this story of a family, but what's unique about this family is they are a family who's navigating massive loss. So you've got Naomi, and she's the matriarch. And in a very short period of time, she loses her husband and she loses her 2 sons. I can't even imagine. When I read Naomi's story, I can't even imagine the depth of the loss, the depth of the grief that she's experiencing. And not only is it a huge relational loss, but it's a major moment of instability for her and her daughters-in-law who are still living. Naomi and her husband, some of their backstory is they had been driven from their homeland because of a famine. They were basically refugees. They needed to eat. So they said, where are we going to go? And they ended up in this neighboring country of Moab. Things actually worked out for them. It was okay. They found food. They found security. Their sons found wives. They settled and they made a life. But then Naomi's husband died. And not too long after, so did her sons. So now in this story, you've got not one, but you've got 3 widows. You've got Orpah, Ruth, and Naomi. And when we meet Naomi in this text we heard today, she's in something that I would call survival mode. I don't know if you've been there when you've lost someone. Your heart is broken. Maybe you're feeling that kind of like grief haze that comes after you've lost someone. It's very recent. You don't really know which way is up, but you still have a lot of stuff to do. Like there's arrangements to be made. There's funerals to be planned. There's bills to be paid. Like none of that stuff stops. So you are feeling your grief, but you're also like, okay, I have to be really practical. I have to do these things. I've just got to keep moving forward. So that's where Naomi is when we meet her. And here's what Naomi knows. She knows that even though the thought of these 3 women just sticking together and like making a life, it sounds very warm and fuzzy and encouraging. She knows it's a really bad idea. She knows that for them in their time, this isn't going to get them anywhere. They're not going to survive. So she looks at her daughters-in-law, who she loves dearly, and she says, "We've got to part ways. You're still young enough to find new husbands. This is your homeland. You can build a life here, but I have to go back and figure out my stuff. We can't weigh each other down. We have to part ways. And so in this story, Orpah, one of the daughters-in-law, she listens, but Ruth says no. Now, you might know this part of the story of Ruth, because this is where one of these really famous scriptures that we hear a lot at weddings or in other contexts comes up. And Ruth says, "Naomi, wherever you go, I will go too. Your people will be my people. I'm sticking with you. I'm not giving up on us as a family." And so we get to see these two women go on this journey of grief and healing together. And there's a ton more to this story, and we're going to get there. But I want to spend some time here. Because whenever I hear the book of Ruth talked about, I watch people fast forward through this first part. Like, it's a romance. So people want to get to that part. They do. They're like, yes, okay, Ruth and Boaz, we love that. But we don't want to sit in the grief. But the grief in this story is key to this story. And God does a lot in Naomi's grief. So I don't want us to miss that. And you know, if you are someone who's in a place of grief, or maybe you've been in a place of grief before, I just wonder if hearing Naomi's words that Phyllis read for us, I just wonder if those words click for you. That idea that God has dealt harshly with me. I mean, you know what she's saying there? She's basically saying, I'm grieving and I'm blaming God for it. Now, some of you might hear that and think, well, that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, Pastor Mindy. Like, this is not the uplifting message I came to church for. And that might be true. But I think we need to make space for that. Because when you are able to be that honest with God, when you're able to look God in the face and say, I'm mad at you, I'm grieving, and it feels like it's your fault, friends, I think that that is a huge testament to faith. It takes a lot of faith to be able to do that. And if you are in a place where you're angry at God right now, you absolutely don't need my permission to be there. You don't. But I'm going to give it to you anyway, just in case like you feel that way. You're allowed to feel that. You're allowed to take that to God. God can handle it. God can walk with us every single step of our slow, messy, weird, painful grief. God's not afraid of it. And you know, as long as it takes, as complicated as grief can be, what I think God understands about our grief journey is that grief, it's a lot of things, but it's not quick. It's not quick. I say this at every single funeral I do. So if you ever go to a funeral that I do, you're going to hear this. I say, there is no express route through grief. There's no express route through grief. And the reason I say that is really I'm saying it to myself. It's something I have to learn because I am a fixer. I want things to get better. I want those 5 easy steps to move through the hard thing. Like, I want to know the concrete way to solve the problem. And grief just messes that whole thing up. Like, it's not neat and tidy. And that can be one of the most frustrating parts about grief. You know, as Pastor Rob and I are working on this message this week, we were talking about how do you describe grief? Like, what's a good metaphor for grief? And one of the things we came up with is that sometimes grief feels like you are standing on the beach. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go to the ocean, I don't want to go like too far out because it's mysterious and there's things in the ocean. So I like to stay on the shore. So when I go to the beach, you know, I like to stand. I like to let, you know, my toes be in the sand and the water be up to my ankles. And that's just a very peaceful feeling that we can have. So grief is kind of like that. You stand on the beach, you're relaxed, the water is gently on your ankles. Maybe you close your eyes and you can like hear the ocean and smell the salt. Oh, it's so nice. It's so nice. And then bam. A rogue wave comes, and now you're soaked, and you're cold, and you didn't see it coming. That's what grief is like. It takes us by surprise. It isn't linear. It usually doesn't follow the kind of timeline we want to see. And there's something about the way grief works in our lives. I don't know if it is the shock. I don't know if it's the fact that we can't control it or the way that things come up that you thought, well, this was okay. I guess it wasn't okay. But the way that grief does that, it can be hard for us to know what's true in our lives or even recognize who we are on the other side. I think one of the universal truths, no matter what our grief looks like, is that our grief has a way of being able to change us. It can change our habits, it can change our worldview, it can change our personality, it can even change the way that we relate to God. And we see this in Naomi's story. You know, when she gets back into town, when she and Ruth go back to Naomi's hometown, people are excited to see Naomi. They haven't seen her in a long time. When the women of the town say, "Can this be Naomi?" It's like, yes, she's back. It's a homecoming. It's a reunion. They have their arms open wide. They want to receive Naomi. And Naomi says, "Not so fast. Because I'm not the person I was when I left here years ago. Something has happened to me. I have changed. In fact, I have changed so much, I don't even want you to call me Naomi, because that name is worthless to me." Naomi means pleasant. And she says, "Pleasant? That's not who I am anymore. So if you're going to talk to me, if you're going to call me anything, call me this name, Mara, because it means bitter, and that's who I am now." This section of scripture is just honest and heartbreaking. But it's also a place for Naomi where I start to see some glimpses of hope. Because here's what happens. Naomi has this whole monologue about who she is and how she feels. I mean, she lays her truth out there. And the Bible just lets it sit. What doesn't happen is her friends don't go into, like, make it better mode. You know that mode. They don't say, "No, no, Naomi, that's not you. That's not you, sweetie. You're okay." They don't say, "Naomi, it's not so bad." They don't say every grieving person's favorite phrase, which is, "God has a plan for this, Naomi." They don't do any of that. But they also never call her Mara. If you read through the book of Ruth, that name never shows up again. She's not called it once, not by any person, not by any author. I mean, I think it's amazing that this author thought we needed to record this thing that Naomi says, but then nothing happens with it. And it might be because I'm a Bible nerd. It might be because I like a good redemption story. But when I think about the fact that Naomi is never called Mara, like, I honestly almost need to sit down. Like, it just floors me. Because she has her truth. She can be as bitter and angry as she wants. That is okay and welcome here. But as hard as this moment is, for all of the legitimate reasons Naomi might have to give up on hope and God and everything she knows, God and hope and her people do not give up on her. And the fact that she is still called Naomi, never Mara, is such a powerful reminder that grief can change our stories, but grief doesn't have to end them. 5 years ago, one of our St. Luke's families experienced this firsthand. And I'm just going to preface and say this is a hard story. Cameron Powell was 18 years old. He was in high school, and he took a Xanax before he went to school one day just to calm his nerves. His parents did not know he did this. He didn't know that that pill was laced with fentanyl. And so as the day went on, he felt worse and worse, and no one recognized the symptoms. No one knew what was happening, and he ended up dying the next day. Now, if you talk to his family, they would say he was this super involved, lively, enthusiastic, engaged teenager. Like, he had the whole world in front of him. This was never even on their radar that something like this would happen to them in their family. This was not something they expected. And so this grief just totally knocked them off their feet. They were left questioning everything, wondering what God had for them next, if God even had anything. What could they do with this thing that had happened to them? So through a friend, Cameron's mom, Amy, found an organization called Overdose Lifeline. It provides support to families who have been through this. It helps provide peer counseling. It even helps provide prevention services so other families don't have to go through what the pals went through. And just a couple of weeks ago, Amy's story was told in a front page article in the Indy Star. It talked about the work that she's been doing. It talked about the way that she's working in schools to help people know the signs and help save lives and help this not happen to other families. And as I read Amy's story, it just became so clear that she wants her story, even though there is still so much pain there. I mean, these wounds are not all healed. Everything is not automatically better. But she wants her family's story to help other families from going through what they went through. She wants to use the grief that she's had to help create healing for other people. It's clear to me that Amy has found a new chapter to her story. Again, it doesn't mean the story's all neat and tidy. It doesn't mean it's perfectly resolved. But what it does mean is that God isn't done with her. God isn't done with the story. God isn't done with us when we find ourselves in those places of grief. And we see that with Naomi and Ruth too. God wasn't done with them. Their story continues, and what we find out is that Ruth, as she's going to the fields just to get the excess so that she and Naomi can eat, she meets the owner of one of those fields, and his name is Boaz. Yes, this is where the romance starts. This is where it gets exciting. And it turns out Boaz is the perfect person for her to meet because he's part of Naomi's family line. He's something called a kinsman redeemer. He makes it so that they can have their lives back. It's a miracle that she meets him. And so Ruth and Boaz, they get married, they have a son, and there's this beautiful part in chapter 4 where here's what it says. It says, then the women said to Naomi, and P.S., I'm guessing these are the women who Naomi said, I'm bitter. God's done with me. I'm done with God. Right? Like, these are the people that bore witness to her deepest, darkest pain. Now these women say this. Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who's more to you than seven sons, has borne him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom and became his nurse. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. And yes, it's that David, King David. So we have Naomi, who thought everything was over, and she's literally holding a new beginning in her arms. Now, it wasn't how she imagined. It wasn't what she had hoped for. It was never how she thought her life would turn out. But even in her deepest grief, she was able to find a new story. She was able to find a new hope and a new purpose. I just wonder for us how and where we might be able to do this same thing. I wonder what hope might look like for us in our deepest grief. You know, if you were listening on the announcements closely, you heard Rachel talk about Grief Share that's coming up. And that Grief Share that starts in February is up at the North Campus. But Lynn Gale, who's over our hospitality ministry here at Midtown, she's going to start a Grief Share here in March. And so Lynn gave me permission to give you all her email, which I just thought was amazing. And so I want to put that up on the screen for you, because if this is something you're interested in, if you want to journey through this grief moment you're in with other people, I want you to take a picture of Lynn's email or write it down and just get in contact with her. Because there is something about sitting with others who have been there where you don't have to explain yourself, where you don't have to make any kind of, you know, disclaimers or excuses or feel like you have to make exceptions for things, but you can just be who you are. You can just be in that grief moment and do it with others. So Lynn's going to start that in March. She'll have more details. We'll have a real registration when it comes time. But I just want you to know, like, that is out there for you. There are people you can do that journey with. Because if you're grieving, just like Naomi, just like Amy Powell, just like Ruth, your story isn't over. Is it changed? Yes. Is it harder than you want it to be? I mean, I'm guessing so. But it's not over. God isn't done with you. And no matter what you're walking through now, God can use it to create something good. Will you pray with me? God, earlier in our prayer time, we presented our grief to you, what we're carrying. Jesus, maybe this is another moment for us to do that. Maybe it's a moment for us to hold our grief out and just believe that you receive it with hope. God, healing isn't fast. I wish it was. I truly do. But it's not fast. It's not neat and tidy. But God, it is possible, and it is something that you co-create with us. So Jesus, as we navigate our grief, as we look at our stories, as we wonder what's next, I pray that you could remind us that good things can happen. And Jesus, that our story isn't over. Amen. Amen. I want to invite you to stand as you're able.